It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times on 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. And I'm joined now by Guy Taylor, Washington Times State Department correspondent.
Andy, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. I want to start with something I know you've been working on today, and that is the arrival of President-elect Enrique Peña Nieto of Mexico. He stopped by the White House. Is that what I understand?
Right. Enrique Peña Nieto, he's going to be at the White House this afternoon for a private meeting with both President Obama and President Biden. It'll be the first visit. Peña Nieto is replacing the well-known drug warrior President Felipe Calderon, who has been president in Mexico for the last 6 years. They have a single six-year term in Mexico under the Mexican Constitution, so Enrique Peña Nieto, who's a fairly centrist character, has won re-election. Is just coming into his term. It'll start next month.
Mm-hmm. What are they expected to talk about this afternoon? Any idea?
Well, I mean, there are a couple things. I mean, obviously, the President Obama's posture on immigration will come up because I think there's widespread support in Mexico for the fact that the administration has taken a softer tone toward illegals in the United States. This is a very sensitive issue down in Mexico City and across Mexico because so many people have relatives that live in the United States illegally, and there's a lot of political pressure in Mexico to put pressure on Washington to ease restrictions and limitations on things like the travel of illegal immigrants. So that might come up, and the question then it becomes, does the administration use its leverage there to open possible talks about things like opening up Mexico's state-controlled energy industry to investment from private U.S. companies. The state-controlled energy industry in Mexico, which pretty much controls all the oil fields and natural gas, has been owned by the government for about 70 years, and Enrique Peña Nieto has shown throughout the campaign of the past year that he's as interested and eager as any Mexican president in recent memory, particularly Vicente Fox or Felipe Calderon, to open it up to private investment. Obviously, it's sensitive in Mexico because people don't want, they don't like the idea of big U.S. companies coming in and pushing the industry around, but at the same time, the opportunity there is big, and I think it's probably in very much in the interest of the Obama administration to pursue it, but it remains to be seen whether they will.
Yeah, and the U.S., of course, being the largest trading partner for Mexico.
This is a really important point, Andy. It's so overlooked in the last in coverage of Mexico. The common narrative that you see in the American media focuses on the drug war. It focuses on the violence. Obviously, there's a huge organized crime and drug cartel problem in Mexico. But the reality is that quietly on the side for the last 20 years, economic ties have expanded dramatically between Mexico and the United States through things like co-manufacturing, everything from car, you know, Ford Motor Company's engine factories in Mexico to airplane parts makers. Products get co-manufactured, which means laborers and manufacturers and workers here in the United States rely on exports to Mexico and vice versa. So it's pretty interesting. You don't hear that side of the story very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. I want to take you to another story that we've been following and obviously you've been writing about, and that is what's happening in Egypt, Cairo in particular. And as a result of a new president, hasn't been around all that long, but he's part of the Muslim Brotherhood, and I'm talking about Mohamed Morsi. One hand, the U.S. was quick to point out that this new Egyptian president was a key player in negotiating a truce between the Israelis and Hamas in Gaza. On the other hand, we don't know what we have in this guy yet, do we?
No, we really don't. I think one of the things that I would want to point out, and I have been in any conversation with anybody who reads the stories that I write or asks me about, you know, the experiences I've had in Egypt over the years or here and now over listening to this administration following foreign policy in Washington, is that, like, Egypt, during the Mubarak years prior to the Arab Spring, for hundreds of years, has been a Muslim country. It has a small population of Christians, but it is a Muslim country, and it is going to be. So the immediate concern is whether whether or not Mohamed Morsi, who is the first ever popularly democratically elected president in Egypt, is going to try and take, and he is a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, which has all kinds of historical ties, but is a major political player in Egypt. Is he going to use that fact that it's a Muslim country to try and impose some sort of Islamic-style judiciary and Islamic-style law? That's the immediate thing that comes up when he does something like a power grab and says, okay, anything I say cannot be overturned by a court until we signed a new constitution. While that is true, the next thing that comes up is that Egypt is a post-dictator society. It's a post-revolution society where people, whether they're from a religious party or not, are struggling, or whether they're secular young liberals or old liberals. There are all sorts within the political spectrum in Egypt, and they're struggling right now to come up with the passage of a constitution by which the coming decades the country will be governed. And what Morsi is trying to say is there are people in the judiciary and there are people in the military, all religious issues aside, who just want to hold that process up because they are angry that Mubarak was pushed out of power. And what I need to do is tell those people to be quiet because we've already elected a council that is trying to draft this constitution. So get out of the way so we can finish it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see it's delicate. There's two sides to it.
Okay, well, that's good. Is the Obama administration content to sit back and watch this?
It certainly seems that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It certainly does. I think they're towing it. What I tried to outline in my story today by talking to people, some people that are really against the administration, but other folks that have a close ear in the White House, is that just this is not an easy line to toe. I mean, there are people in the House of Representatives, particularly on the Republican side, that would say, of course it's an easy line to toe. Just stop funding anything in
mm-hmm.
Egypt. Problem is, if you do that, then you basically cut off ties to a government that might be swinging very far into the conservative Islamic realm, and that's as dangerous as carrying on the way we're doing now. So this is a really delicate, it's a hard issue.
Yeah.
I think a lot of eyes are on the administration to see whether or not they're even capable of putting a firm foot forward. You can't forget the fact that the U.S., okay, it doesn't matter who's been in the White House, the U.S. had a fairly warped foreign policy relationship with Egypt's past president, a dictator who had a pretty horrific record of putting anybody he wanted to in jail, and on grounds that he didn't like their religion or their politics. And the United States continued to fund his government because he was a partner in doing things like assuaging the tension between Israel and Palestine. So the question is now, with a religious leader in Cairo, does the United States suddenly say, well, we don't want to support you anymore? What precedent was set, whether it's back from Nixon to Reagan through the Clinton years, the Bush years, now with Obama, what precedent was set by supporting a dictator in Egypt? It's a very difficult position the United States finds itself in with Egypt right now.
Yeah. And one more thing before I let you run, Guy. Did the fact that the U.S., through Hillary Clinton, patted Morsi on the back last week influence his decision to make the grab for the power?
I think it's a really good question, and that definitely, I brought that up in my story, and I haven't really seen it anywhere else. What I was trying to point out is, particularly these folks over at the American Enterprise Institute, they generally have a really sober look at the Middle East, and their argument was like, look, you know, Hillary Clinton appeared in Cairo after Mohamed Morsi had played this role in getting Hamas in Palestine and the Israeli leadership to talk out a ceasefire. She appeared in Cairo and she said that the most important thing for the United States and the region is stability. She said that as she thanked him for his role. What some people, in particular the American Enterprise Institute, will say is that President Mohamed Morsi in Cairo misread that. He took it and he was like, I'm going to run with this.
Mm-hmm.
Stability is more important to them than anything else. Well, you know what? In order to create the stability that we need to get this constitution pushed through, I'm going to put out a decree that says that my word is more powerful mm-hmm. than the courts.
That's called spending political capital. That's what that is.
Well, on both sides.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think he's done that now. So, you know, it'll be interesting. I tend to try and discourage people from taking too reactionary a posture towards the Muslim Brotherhood in Cairo. I think you got to watch with an extremely close eye, and I'm an advocate of the United States talking a firm game and doing things like discussing whether or not to cut funding. However, having talked and traveled around Egypt and talked to a lot of people there about politics, you got to remember that the Muslim Brotherhood political party was fighting for almost 20 years under a dictator to try and create some kind of representation for people that was legitimate and democratically elected in Egypt. It can't be left off the table. I think it would be naive not to include that. So now that they're in power, the question is how much power do they try to seize?
Mm-hmm.
And what does the United States say about it?
Yep. All right, folks, if you haven't read it, please check it out. Morsi's Power Grab Test U.S. Post-Revolt Tolerance. It's by Guy Taylor. It's in today's Washington Times. Good to talk to you, Guy. Appreciate
it. Andy, thanks so much for having me.